And we are once
Love
again
Radio.
I did not even know that song was coming. Anyway, it's Friday. Once again, what's up, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. How's everybody doing tonight?
I'm going all right. It's been that crazy day, the crazy week, holiday season, you know how it is. I saw some guy on the way home from work, you know, people out there on the corners flipping signs, and it said, believing in Jesus is talking to Jesus. I was just like, all right. Like, he's not working for any business or anything. He's just flipping a sign, and he's doing a good job.
I saw an episode of 1,000 Ways to Die, in which a guy was flipping one of the signs and cut his own jugular. So, it was over for him.
Yeah, I need to start DVRing that again. I forgot about that show.
Yeah, it's a crazy show, man. It's a crazy show. Speaking of death, man, you can find all kinds of ways not to kill yourself in that show.
Yeah, I would think that that's like the ultimate idea. Like, you wake up in the morning, and as soon as you leave the house, you're like, how am I not going to die? If you get in your car, you're like, I'm going to put on my seatbelt because I'm not going to die. I'm going to stop at the stop sign, stop at the red light. There's a cop pulls up, I'm going to be calm because I'm not trying to die. That will to live.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when you buy life insurance or even automobile insurance or any of those things, what you're doing is you're betting against, you know, your death. You're betting against, you know, having an accident. It's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't even know if insurance policies cover some of these deaths you see on 1,000 Ways to Die. I mean, I'm talking about how many people you know of are actually shredded to death by a tree shredder. Or, you know, fall into a vat of acid. So, you know, I mean, even one guy got his penis ripped off by a raccoon that he was trying to rape and pretty much bled to death. So, yeah, that was a pretty bad nightmare.
Trying to rape a raccoon.
Yeah.
And that is a harsh way to start the show off. That's the real deal right there. That's trying to rape a raccoon. I did not see that episode. That must have been where I dropped off. I mean, the last one I saw was a mob boss guy got crushed with a garbage dumpster. So yeah, he didn't want to do his job with the garbage. Like, it smashed him between the dumpster and a brick wall.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. It can be pretty, I don't know. I mean, I just think you got to be really, really trying to die if you come up with these ways. I mean, if you end up offing yourself in these methods, you know, you're really working hard at it.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Like you just, you're not that interested in living. Are you just, I don't know, maybe something's wrong with your... Maybe Raina needs to dissect your brain and see what's wrong with your brain to why you aren't that interested in living. Like, I would even go as far, like, my biological sister, like, she attempted suicide and she failed, but then, like, for the next several years, she just lived really irresponsibly, like, just constantly taking the most retarded possible risk. And it's like, well, you're not trying to commit suicide directly, but you're still just kind of... You're stepping on those railroad tracks and seeing what happens.
Right.
That was something I read that, you know, that said that, you know, people who are going to do that kind of have this disconnect when they finally have, you know, when they finally commit themselves to doing it. That's why I've seen some of these videos that kind of, you know, they're pretty horrific. And with somebody will, you know, just jump in front of a train and then, you know, and it's like, you know, that's probably going to hurt for a while, you know, until you find, you know, expire and whatnot. There's something, I guess there's something in your mind that, like, you know, disconnecting, and they have to do it, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way or whatever. You know, it's still true, the tragedy then. Everything, but you know, you covered something on suicide not long ago. Did you, Kim?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about suicide on several different occasions, and actually on Frontline they're doing a series about suicide, and basically it's about elderly people, geriatrics, that are having assisted suicide plans put in place for a number of different reasons. But yeah, you know, suicide, depression, we've talked about all of these different things, and I just think
right.
It's important we bring that information to the forefront and, you know, let people know that, you know, definitely they are not alone, and if there are people out here that care about them, I mean, there are a lot of different organizations out there. You know, in the community, you have recovering from religion that can help you. You have grief beyond belief. And there are a number of different, you know, programs out there that can help you. And I've posted them before. And if anyone needs them, I can post them again, or they can inbox me or what have you. But, you know, again, you know, dealing with death or suicide or what have you, it's just, you know, many of us have not had to deal with that as non-believers. And many of us are accustomed to dealing with it as believers, the ones that were formerly believers, and always could take comfort in saying that that person has gone on to be with the Lord or whatever, or, you know, at least they're of a pain, or, you know, one of those little colloquials to kind of, you know, assuage the pain and the fear. But mm-hmm. as a non-believer, you know, it's a different ball game. It's a different ball game because we know it's just over, done, which is why I say we should appreciate people now. And it
right.
should encourage, yeah, it should encourage us to have better coping skills and understanding, you know, the stages of grief and understanding how to cope with that grief.
Right. Right, right, right. No, and I totally, you know, I really do understand, you know, people needing to find some way to, I mean, death is, you know, I don't know if many people know this, but death is pretty much a part of human existence, okay? All right, and so, you know, you can attribute to many different types of, you know, religious customs or whatever, and, you know, origins, and there is many, there are plenty of religious origins for explanation of why humans die or whatever, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I guess there's always going to be that. But, you know, humans have always sought to understand death. It's been some type of, it's a mystical fascination. You know, some people even claim to be able to speak to the dead and stuff like that. I don't know how in-depth we're going to get in on that, but you know, because, you know, that kind of goes into, like, kind of another territory, because I know some atheists who say that they've seen ghosts, so, you know, I don't know how deep we'll get into that. But, you know, death is, you know, I know as an atheist myself, I believe that death is the end of the story. That's it. You know, you checked out. It's over. You know what I'm saying? Game finished. You know what I'm saying? I don't believe in an afterlife, so I don't have that backup plan. All I have is this life, because as far as I know, no one's come back from the afterlife to tell me that there is an afterlife to begin with. So I have no
right.
way to. I have no evidence that there is an afterlife. I'm certainly not going to read the book, the Bible, to make sense of believing that, because I don't even follow the Bible. So
exactly.
If someone in my family dies, I have no choice to either comfort myself or talk to friends and remain in family.
Right, right. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, with death and, you know, just the different emotions surrounding it. It's natural. It's natural to have, you know, a variety or a myriad of different emotions. It's natural for it to be painful, you know, if you really care about that individual, you know, that pain and sadness that you're experiencing, that's natural. And you have to let it run its course. But also, you know, the good thing about our community that it's growing, it's evolving, and there are different support groups out there that can, you know, support you and assist you and get you resources. You know, we have a therapy project with Freedom from Religion, and they're matching up secularists with secular therapists, and there are a lot of things out there, but, you know, understand that you're definitely not alone, because many of us have made friends in this community, acquaintances, all of that. And it's just as important that we continue to, you know, kind of evolve and grow and expand. And that's what we're doing. That's definitely what we're doing. And even with some of the college campuses, just to kind of let you guys know, with the college campuses, you know, they have programs out there for the young people as well as high school. So, you know, they have them out there, and I would just tell you to, you know, go to your counselor and find out what they have and reach out. You know, I say all the time, if you reach out to us, we definitely will reach back. And so that's what I would encourage people to do. Just get out there. You know, they have programs like Active Minds out there. Look here, I'll find the information. I'll give you all the Facebook link in the room, and I'll put it on my wall as well. But Active Minds is a program for people dealing with mental health issues. And the reason why I'm saying and telling you about this particular group is because it's on college campuses. And so they can help some of the younger folks out with some of the issues that they're having. And it's just, you know, helping you with the coping mechanism. That's all that is.
I think that there's an emotional connection too with the person that is dying, like that's a big thing there, which is all of us. We are all the person that's going to die, like we know it's going to happen, and you know, and I think that's a lot of where they come up with these ideas, like I want to have something like a spirit or a soul, something that'll live on. You know, we don't want all of our experiences and our memories and all of our thoughts and opinions and everything we've learned to just disappear. We worry about that. We don't like that that definite end. I know I don't like that. I'd like to just hang around and be a ghost, just kind of, you know, chilling out. I want to see the new generation of rappers come up. Maybe they'll get dope again, you know. And I think part of that might be like you know how attached human beings have become to technology, and look at how attached people are to their Twitter, their Facebook, or if they're just on like a closed online community, their persona there. That's like their external. That's where they put their soul. So like it's like that. Like maybe I can live on there, you know, so something outside themselves, instead of just dealing with the fact that your brain really is a physical brain and there's nothing magical about it. It's just nature wired that thing well. So we're extremely cognizant, and we just happen to be cognizant of the fact that we're going to die, and we worry about
and
that.
And that's the reason why I would tell you, you know, for those of you out there that have these different gifts and talents, to recognize them, cultivate them, and create a legacy so that you will leave something behind, something for people to remember you by. You know, I just think it's important that, you know, we appreciate people for who and what they are now, and, you know, we appreciate one another, and, you know, leave a little legacy behind. You know, with this information technology that we have, you know, available to us, we can all leave some type of legacy behind. And I just think it's important, so I'm just encouraging people, whatever you're good at, you know, find a way to market it, brand it, get it out there, and, you know, leave your footprint behind.
Yes, and come to terms with the fact that you're not going to live on to see yourself remembered. That's going to be something that happens when your brain is clicked. Turned off. You don't have that anymore, and you're just being remembered. Tupac did not get to live to see himself be remembered with all these extra records being released and holograms and whatnot. He didn't get to see that. That's just something that he put out there so that it would be there.
Exactly. And it's just interesting. Yeah, Tupac, he has made how many albums since his death? But that's another story. I mean, that vault must have been huge.
Yeah.
I was just going to define grief for people so they'll know what grief means. And grief is a natural response to loss. It's the emotional suffering you feel when something or someone you love is taken away. You may associate grief with the death of a loved one, and this type of loss does often cause the most intense grief. But any loss can cause grief. And so it's talking about a few things here. You know, divorce or relationship breakup, loss of health, losing a job, loss of financial stability, a miscarriage, death of a pet, loss of a cherished dream, a loved one's serious illness, loss of a friendship, loss of safety after a trauma. And I guess, in some ways you can kind of attribute these to death. I mean, you know, loss of health, you know, if not caught early enough, you know, it could lead to death. You know, losing a job, you know, that feels like death, especially if you've been there for a while or you have really no other backup plan or other means to support yourself, you know, which ties into the loss of financial stability, you know, loss of a treasure or a cherished dream. You know, sometimes, you know, that can feel like death because, again, it's about perception there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a thought there about losing an income that you probably really do need on a monthly basis, on an annual basis. We're like, yeah, sure, your first thought, you know, in the front of your head is, how am I going to be able to pay this bill? Ah, geez, am I going to be able to get another job, one that pays the same salary? But, really, deep in the back of your head, you know that if you can't pay that bill, you're outside in the cold, you don't have food, you'll be malnourished, you won't be able to take care of your personal hygiene, you're going to have, you know, this grossness crawling all over you, you're going to be closer to dying if you lose that job. So yeah, that thinking of that job, it feels like a death, because it feels like death is coming. Like, I got to get another job so I don't die.
You know,
right.
speaking of that, that's probably slightly off topic a little bit, but there was a jellyfish I read about in some type of scientific journal that has the ability to, in times of extreme times, it has the ability to rejuvenate its own cells, meaning that it could potentially live forever. I thought that was pretty fascinating because it's like, it's a pretty small jellyfish. It can regenerate its own cells and potentially, it can potentially live forever, so they say. And,
That is fascinating.
Yeah. I won't even attempt to pronounce the scientific name because, you know, I don't speak super science. That's a whole other language for me. And it's a very tiny jellyfish, but it, you know, saying it can transfer its existing cells into a younger state. So I guess, you know, then it can be kind of reborn stuff. I don't know. I just thought it was pretty funny.
I'm putting the link in a room so people can go and read the article about that jellyfish that you're talking about. It had a really good article in Discover magazine about that. And basically, you know, it was a hydrozoan. You know, a jellyfish like hydrozoan. And it's actually the only animal known to be potentially immortal. And what happens is, you know, according to the article here, is once it reaches sexual maturity, that basically it looks like a tiny transparent mini-tentacled parachute, and it's only about 5 millimeters in diameter. And it floats freely in warm ocean waters, and You know, basically when times get rough, it can turn into a blob, anchor itself to a surface, and undergo kind of like a reverse metamorphosis. So that is fascinating.
Right. You know, that is definitely a very fascinating thing right there. It leads me to kind of wonder if, because I ask myself, you know, especially when we relate to religion and everything, and like I remember when my grandmother got breast cancer, it's when I really started contemplating stuff like this, like, why is death necessary to begin with? And so my grandmother Joseph with, that she believed in, you know, she believed in Adam and Eve, and she believed in, you know, Eve pretty much screwed everybody over. And that eventually, I mean, after this life, there'll be a paradise earth. You know, and like I said, you know, there are many different religious beliefs when it comes to death, life and death, and afterlife, and stuff like that. But it relates to her, though, that's what she believes. And so I find myself asking myself, why is death necessary to begin with? And why were humans created mortal from the outset? If he already created immortal beings, why would he then make mortal beings? Or were we immortal and then we became mortal after she ate the apple, after listening to, you know, just some randomly talking snake? You know, I look at that, and I'm looking at my grandmother, and my grandmother didn't miss a beat when she got breast cancer. I can tell you that. But I found myself asking the question why she was attributing her continued living to God. I'm asking, why was she in threat of dying to begin with? And even if she does not die today, she's going to die eventually. So, you know, then, We kind of have this need to explain our lives, you know, or understand our lives, and in so doing, we also have a need to believe that our deaths are, important, and so we have a reverence for death. We have this kind of, appreciation for those who died, especially if they died a certain way, you know.
Right. Right, and I think that kind of attributes to some people's death. If the person died, you know, a particularly violent or painful or, you know, elongated death, that, you know, we process that, you know, a little bit differently. And it's just, the whole thing is interesting, but yeah, you know, religion tends to have answers to almost everything, or alleged answers to everything, but they don't want you to question anything. It's interesting.
Right.
So, you know, again, you know, with your granny, you know, when she was explaining things to you, she's explaining, you know, what has been taught to her, explaining to the best of her ability, and it's what gives her comfort. And, you
right.
know, when you're dealing with religious people, you know, spiritual people, what happens is basically many of them are afraid of death and not knowing what happens after a person dies, and also having some type of comfort knowing that someone that they love dearly, that they'll have the opportunity to see them again. And, you know, I won't even go into, you know, any details about certain scriptures in the Bible that tells them that in the afterlife they will remember no more. They will remember none of these people. So, you know, you're thinking that you're going to have a big old family reunion in heaven. It's not going to happen, and your own scriptures validate that.
Right.
And if you ask them, if your favorite cousin Bobby was a sinner and he's gonna go to hell, the answer is, oh, you'll just forget about him. You'll be having such a good time in heaven. You'll be having a streets paved with gold. It's awesome. Leprechauns everywhere. It's fantastic.
why do you have streaks to begin with in him? I don't understand why would you need streaks anyway. I mean, what vehicle are you driving in him anyway? Well, that's but it is just hilarious. Every time I hear a description of what Kevin and or hell be like, because Christians have this belief that you're either gonna go to heaven or hell. You know what I'm saying? And I just really find myself in a position to where I'm like, if I'm gonna be tortured forever for not choosing to side with this dude here, and this ain't the guy I need to side with either. Because obviously this guy is so hopped up on his own self that he gets really, really butthurt and I don't like it. Even Bible verses will tell you that. It's really fascinating. If you ever take the time to go through the Bible and read some of the stuff, Jesus is supposed to be this great person. You know what I'm saying? But John 11:25-26 says, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? What sounds like some kind of really messed up stuff that a serious weed head would say, because he who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe it?
It sounds nuts to me. Yes, he obviously did talk to him through a burning bush. They just wrote cognitive dissonance right in there, just he who lives does not die. What are you talking about? You die, or you're alive. It's one or the other. You cannot live on both sides of the street.
Right, exactly. And I'll go ahead and give you all the scriptures, since we're quoting scriptures here. But the scripture that I was talking about earlier is Ecclesiastes 9:5. And the King James Version says, for the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. And they don't teach you that. I don't ever remember hearing a sermon with that.
Right.
Scripture there.
Right. I've never even heard another atheist say that. I've never heard that before. I didn't know that was in there. That's a long book, and it's on my table here, and I don't read it. It's a decoration. I did not know that was in there. They wrote off the whole heaven business. They basically wrote off a soul with that line. That line,
right,
like, says your soul doesn't exist. They just admitted there's a brain.
Exactly.
Killing me.
It's just the whole thing is interesting. And that's the reason why, I say we have to do better in finding coping skills on how to deal with grief and loss. And, some of the myths out there is that the pain will go away faster if you ignore it. That's a myth. The fact of the matter is, trying to ignore your pain or keep it from surfacing or, basically suppressing it will only make it worse in the long run. So for real healing, it is necessary to face your grief and actively deal with it. So you got to let it run its course. Another
right.
myth is it's important to be strong in the face of loss. And the fact of the matter is, and that's a myth, it's important to be strong in the face of loss. The fact of the matter is, feeling sad, frightened, or lonely is a normal reaction to loss. Crying doesn't mean you are weak. You don't need to protect your family or friends by putting on a brave front. Showing your true feelings can help them and you. You may be encouraging someone else to, express their emotions, to emote and, to be forthcoming. So, there's no need to try to put on a brave face or to be stone faced. Just be you. And if you want to cry, cry, let it out, get it out. Another myth is, if you don't cry, it means you aren't sorry about the loss. That's a myth. The fact is, crying is a normal response to sadness. but it's not the only one. Those who don't cry may feel the pain just as deeply as others. They may simply have other ways of showing it. And another myth is grief should last about a year. Now, who are these people telling you you should only grieve for a year? You should be over it. Do not listen to them, because that's bullshit. You know, but again, you know, the fact of the matter is there is no right or wrong time frame for grieving, and there is no right or wrong way to grieve. Well, okay,
right.
There's some wrong ways, but, you know, that's a matter of perception. But you know.
Yeah. I mean, there was some woman whose husband died, and she kept his corpse in, you know, in the house. I think he was still in the bed or something. And I don't know about that right there. There's something kind of icky about that. And, you know, and death really freaked us out. You know, I remember going into a funeral home and feeling this kind of eeriness getting close to their body. Now, obviously, there's nothing going on here. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, my friend's father was a mortician. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that there was nothing to be worried. I mean, obviously, the guy's laying in the coffin. He's not going to get up. And if he did, I'm leaving everybody in this. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, you and me both. You know, if I see somebody get up out of their coffin, sit up, make any type of movement, you know, I'll go ahead and tell you that's going to be your day you see me act real ignorant. I'm running anybody over. So you better hold on to your toddler, because either they're going to grab onto my leg and come with me, or they're going to be pushed because I'm not trying to hear that.
Right, right. As a matter of fact, you know, ancient custom is one of the reasons how we got the idea of the vampire. Like the nailing through the chest was meant to keep the body down, you know, keep it so it cannot rise, you know. And then during decomposition, your nails like they're grown because your cuticles and your fingers are shrunk back, and so sometimes. People are freaked out. He's still alive, or something like that. You know, that's how you kind of get the idea of the vampire. You know, I think that is the funniest thing. You know, I just really think that's kind of funny that you believe this dude is still alive, even though he's been carved off. So you hammer him to the ground. So. It's kind of hilarious and stuff. You know.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, how people deal with grief. But grief is grief. And again, like
right.
I said, there's really no right way and no wrong way to deal with it. You just have to deal with it, because the longer you put it off, you know, I just believe it's going to be even worse when, you know, the feelings finally do surface. And,
right.
You know, it's okay. It's okay to cry. It's okay to feel hurt. It's okay to be vulnerable at times. It really is. It's called being human.
Speaking of which, I guess as good a time as any to mention the Grief Beyond Belief Facebook page, if any of you ever find yourself in need of some form of comfort or help with dealing with death and grief and whatnot. Check the site out, and perhaps someone there can help you if not a friend or family member who you can, you know, you can trust and confide.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't recommend taking on death like the way I did growing up, but I didn't really have much choice though, like because you know, I think I've spoke to this before. My biological mother had AIDS in the 80s and early 90s, and she expired in 93. So it's like she has to tell you this so that you get ready for it years before she dies. That like I'm gonna deteriorate slow and then die. So it's like growing up as a child, it's like it becomes part of the plan. Like, this is just what's going to happen. Like, you're going to have this birthday, this Christmas, this go to school, go to summer camp, and then someone's going to die. And then there's going to be a funeral, and you're going to wear these shoes and this clip-on tie, and you're going to walk this way past the cat. And it's just part of the plan. And then, like, since she had AIDS back then, and it was hard to get a group together because, you know, there wasn't all this internet stuff. But, like, all her friends were people with AIDS from her AIDS group. So it's like, you know that Rick is going to die. And then Vivian's going to die. And it's just it's just the routine. And it's just getting up and you go to that funeral and, you wear the suit. And I don't think that's a good way to do it, to just see it as part of the plan.
Right.
But, I was the kid. I didn't set that up.
Oh, yeah, but see, what you're describing one of the stages of grief. And, you know, anyone who's listened to this show, they know I've talked about stages of grief on several different occasions. But, you know, one of the stages is denial, numbness, and shock. And this stage serves to protect the individual from experiencing the intensity of the loss. It may be useful when a grieving person must take action, for example, making funeral arrangements. Numbness is a normal reaction to an immediate loss and should not be confused with lack of caring. As the individual slowly acknowledges the impact of the loss, denial and disbelief will diminish. The other stage of grief is bargaining. Then you have depression. Then you have anger. Then you have acceptance. So, you know, just to kind of let you guys know that the different emotions that you're experiencing in these types of situations, that's normal, you know, and if you're having issues sleeping or, you know, your appetite has changed or you have absolutely no energy, you're fatigued, you can't concentrate, you're, you know, foggy or you're having those crying spells, and you may feel lonely, empty, isolated, you know, self-pity, feeling sorry for yourself, those are signs of depression, which is why I mentioned, the page earlier, and I put it on my Facebook wall, and it's also in the room because there's help out there. And that was for college students, but, you know, again, you know, recovering from religion and grief beyond belief, all of that, there are people out here that can help you.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Definitely. You know, I really do think that, that we really, when you have a loved one who you spend all your life, you know, this person has either been there for you or has raised you. This person has been not only a part of your life, in some parts, in some ways, they've been that person that kept you alive or they've kept you going. But they've just been there for you. God isn't that person is no longer there with you, you know what I'm saying, there for you to talk to. I can understand why people feel the need to believe that those people are still looking down upon them or trying to guide them or, you know, and help them or appear to them, everything like that, you know. I can understand the need for it because you're not ready to let go. And, you know, said, who am I to say that there's no possibility that any of that exists, you know. But, you know, on the same token, you know, there are people who can't talk to. And I know that not everybody has a good support. Not everybody has people that they can reach out to. And that's one of the reasons you get look for sites like Grief Beyond Belief and you get to know other people and friends and make friends with people who have gone through these processes, who have dealt with these losses and who can be there for you, you know, and show
exactly.
You that.
Exactly. No, Mario, you know, you're absolutely correct, you know, and, you know, yeah, be there for those people, you know, and if you can't help them, redirect them to someone else, then, like I said, if you reach out, we'll definitely, you know, hook you up with who you need to speak with or get you to a source that can help you. You know, and there are some factors that may hinder, you know, grief and healing. And, you know, some of the ones listed is overworking oneself on the job, medicating with drugs, alcohol, or other substances, compulsive behavior, you know, that can be compulsive eating, compulsive shopping. You know, there's a bevy of different types of compulsive behaviors. Avoiding emotions. You are not a robot. You will emote. You do emote. Minimizing feelings, you know, whether that's from you or someone else. Do not ever let anyone minimize your feelings. You know, say, oh, you didn't really care that much. You really don't care that much. If you care that much, you care. Don't allow anyone to do that. You know, don't do that to yourself. And there are some factors that can help you, you know, resolve that grief. You know, by allowing yourself time to experience thoughts and feelings openly to self and others, if you have, you know, a support unit there, expressing your feelings openly, you know, in a support group or some friends, family, whomever, you can write journal entries about your feelings, and nowadays you can have your blog. You can remember that crying can provide a release, confiding in a trusted person about the loss, acknowledging and accepting both positive and negative feelings, finding bereavement groups, which we've, you know, given you all the information about a few. There are several out there. Look around. Finding bereavement groups in which there are other people who have had similar losses, and then seeking professional help if these feelings become overwhelming, if you can't function anymore. It's important for you to reach out and get the help that you need.
Right. So let me ask a question then, you know, we're on this, you know, because I've always wanted, well, I've bantered this back and forth with these people, I'd say. And the question is, how do you feel about funerals? And in some cases, I guess that it really is a burial. How do you feel about it? Do you think that, I guess, I don't want to say necessary. I guess the question comes from seeing some very elaborate, really old, really well thought out funerals, in which, you know, they have long procession, 3 or 4 limousines and gigantic monuments. You know what I'm saying? People, I mean, giant headstones,
well,
and all the whole
right.
shebang. Like one of the coworkers I work with. That was pretty redundant. Anyway, one of the people I work with, their wife died. And so I went there to pay my respect after work. And so I'm looking at a stainless steel, galvanized, leak-proof coffin. Now, this coffin had to be probably $20,000, something like that. It was definitely made so that the body inside can't be gotten to by any critters or whatever, you know what I'm saying, or a rod or whatever. And so I always wondered, you know, I don't think I'll ever need that. You know what I'm saying? Put me in a sack, put me in the oven, scatter my ashes somewhere, be done with it. You can do all that for $30 if you want to. I don't care. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
you know, I'm
well,
going to be dead.
I can explain that to you. What happens is the funeral home, they play on the vulnerability of those grieving. And they, you know, basically play on the fact that that person's emotions are still raw, that they're not necessarily thinking clearly at the time, because you're right, you know, Aunt Ida ain't going to feel no water, you know what I mean? You know, they're not going to feel, you know, any of that. So, you know, again, you know, when people have, you know, they're dealing with guilt, you know, or whatever the situation is. But, yeah, you know, the funeral homes are manipulating them and basically exploiting that vulnerability that that person has at that moment. So it happens. It happens.
And if you have any comments or questions that you want to contribute to the show, you know, to this topic, give us a call at 310-982-4273 and press 1. You know, I wouldn't mind hearing what some of you have to say about that. So what do you think about burial? Will?
About burials? We
gotta
stop that. What are we doing? We're just taking up land? Like, I was looking earlier, too, like, Like how much space are we taking up? We could be setting up homeless shelters, man. You know, put up a youth center, more houses, maybe a decent business with, or farm that land. What are you killing me? Like, and grow something other than corn, please. Like, let's get some cruciferous vegetables growing on this stuff. Put some trees up there while we're cutting down so many forests. And in Washington State, grow some reefer. You know, it's legit. You know, like, Jesus Christ, we're burying people. And like what I think about funerals, you're boring the hell out of me with these funerals. They're killing me with the funeral. Really, everybody has to wear the black suit, and Jesus Christ. But then everyone wants to say, I want to celebrate the life. You don't look like you're doing that. You don't sound like you're doing that. It's not in your face. You are not celebrating the life. You're still sad. You know, set the funeral aside for after you get the sad out. Make it a party. Like, I'm a bit abstract. Like, if I could have my, and I know nobody would do this for me because no one is as goofy as I am, but I have some rap songs, you know, play my records and taxiderm me up like a puppet and put me on some strings and puppet string me and make it look like I'm rapping my songs while I'm dead. That would be a hilarious, fantastic thing.
See, this is the thing, William. You're not doing it right. If you go to a black funeral and you are bored, you are not doing it right, or they are not doing it right, because black funerals are entertaining and amusing as hell. Trying to figure out who's going to be the first one to get the Holy Ghost and who's going to shout with, who's going to try to jump in the casket or jump in a damn hole when they're lowering the body. You know, who's going to scream the loudest? Who's going to toss their hat up in the air? So, you know. You know. Yeah,
well,
I should have went to the
Pentecostal funerals then, because I remember the Pentecostal church was having them in the neighborhood, because, you know, the old people in the church, you know, a couple of them would drop every year, you know, it's an annual tradition. And, I never went in there. I just see all the cars around and be like, I just assumed it was the typical thing. So I probably missed the show. I want to see somebody do the Holy Ghost shuffle, maybe break it down, do a little step, put a seawalk in there, whatever they got to do. I should have went in there.
Right. And, you know, then you have to go to the, you know, the repast afterwards where you get some of the best cooking ever. You know, you don't have any motivation to go to a funeral, you know, the food afterwards. Now, I know I'm being a bit crass, so, you know, just forgive me. Just making it a little light, so. You know, because, I mean, this is very real for a lot of people. And, you know, one thing that I will say, you know, a lot of people forget, don't forget about the babies. And I posted a link on my wall as well as in the room. You know, a lot of times the adults are so focused on their grief that they forget to help the children and forget to understand that the children are grieving as well. Because in some cases they don't really understand or know what's happening. You know, so
right.
Learning how to explain death and grief to children, you know, and what gets me about some religious people, and I know I had to deal with this, you know, growing up, and basically, you know, when I would tell my mom I was feeling sad or depressed, I was told that I was the quote-unquote righteousness of God, and that Christians don't depress because the joy of the Lord is my strength. To this day, I still don't know what the fuck that means. But I just knew that, you know, it taught me how to suppress my feelings. And, you know, I just find it a shame that it took me basically until my 30s to really understand and identify certain emotions, because they get you all confused. And when they start indoctrinating that in you as a child, you know, that's horrible because you grow up confused.
Right. Right, and I just remember the article you had sent me where you had posted us about Calgary actually running out of burial space. You know, like that's an odd thing to imagine. Like, man, we bury so many people, we run out of space to bury. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I remember when I went to D.C. and I went to Arlington National Cemetery, and I'm like, man, there are a lot of headstone grass out here. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, it's a trip to school. You're supposed to be interested in it. And I don't want to be disrespectful, but what I'm seeing is a field of headstone, or, you know, I guess whatever you call those things. And I'm looking at that, and I'm like, well, there's not really anything happening. So, you know, and then, you know, you got the, you know, you got the somber atmosphere of the whole area, and everybody's acting very reverent. And don't get me wrong, I mean, this is, you know, the people buried there, you know what I'm saying, fought in wars and were buried honorably and whatnot. And I'm not trying to disparage that. I'm saying that the trip itself did not, I would have rather gone to the Smithsonian because I'm more interested in, you know, the natural sciences and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, did you see the article of the 127-year-old woman?
No. 120, is he cognizant? Is his brain on?
I'm trying to be, you know what, I can't be nice about this. She literally looks like a burlap sack. Okay?
Ew.
And she's supposed to be 127 years old. And I'm like, man, if I got to look like that to be 127, cut me off, man. Somebody, I mean, I would hate to be waking up and I'm 120 years old. Like, when the fuck am I going to die? Do I have to go to New York and reach for my wallet or something like that? I mean,
ooh. I mean, really, when you're that old, man, it's like, and you're not really doing anything else. I'd say my cutoff point for when I say cut the cord and kill me is when my thumbs don't work and I can't play video games anymore. Because that's all you're going to be doing at that age. You know, especially our generation, you know, we're just going to be sitting around playing video games from the time we're 83 to 93. And if your thumbs break and somewhere around 88 or 89 years old, yeah, can me out. I'm done. I can't go poon some noobs on Halo anymore.
Oh, that's too funny. No, I'm going to be on the internet talking shit. Give me some of that voice recognition technology and speak into my blog and have me a radio show. And
right, all the cool stuff. And you know what? I'm almost done. I'm ready to wrap it up. You know what? Give me some of that heroin. Let me try some of that methane. Bring that stuff on. It's almost over anyway. Let me see, what's the fuss about crack? Because crackheads seem to really like crack. I just want to see what it is they like about it so much. I'm 88 years old.
You can try all the drugs. Get some bath salts.
Man, right? It's almost over. Let's give it a shot.
Oh, that's too funny. Oh, yeah. It's just... It's interesting, you know, how that plays out. But, yeah, 127 years of age, I don't know. You know, maybe we should send her some lotion or something. Anyway.
Oh, man, it was really weird, man. I mean, you know, if you watched Batman Begins, the mask Scarecrow was wearing, yeah, she looked like that, man. It's pretty rough, man. I don't know what you have to do to live as long, but I really don't want to live as long. You know, I always found myself having the idea that I want my funeral, if I have one, to be either entertaining or just really outlandishly weird, just for the hell of the memory of it. You know, like, have a death match with clowns or something. I mean, just something really out there. Just to let these people know, if you're going to come to my burial, you're going to remember this shit. All right, bring out the dancing squirrel or something, okay? Just bring them on out. You can even bring, you can have strippers. I don't mind strippers coming to my funeral. You know what I'm saying? Just have them do something evil. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm pretty sure that stripping is going to be pretty, pretty dang interesting. But you know what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe just have them do something like, I guess, you know what I'm saying, wrestling in, I don't know, jelly. Just wrestle in jelly, some strawberry jelly, just for the hell of strippers wrestling in strawberry jelly at my funeral, right? You're going to remember that shit. Trust me.
You know, it would tickle my sense of humor if I... If I die anywhere near Halloween, just freeze the body and keep it fresh. And then just when trick-or-treaters knock on the door, just, like, throw me out the window in front of the porch, and they'll actually think some guy just died in front of them.
You want them to do a James Brown on you, keep your house below freezing?
That would be savage.
See, for my funeral and my family, they just laugh when I tell them little things like this. What I want is, basically, I'm going to do my own damn eulogy. Throw the DVD in there. We're going to have some karaoke. And all of my nieces and nephews, you know, I helped to raise them. So I remember everything about their childhood. And so, you know, it's a set of twins. And I remember they used to love that song from Donna Summer, Bad Girls. So they have to sing that at my funeral. And my nieces and nephews, they always tease because I used to love me some Prince. And I think I made them watch Purple Rain like at least 100 times. So at the end of the funeral, everybody has to get up and sing Purple Rain before they get a chance to enjoy the nice buffet that I will provide. But see, the thing is that my body won't be there because I'm going to donate my body to science. So that's why I'm giving my own damn eulogy. It's my funeral. I can say what the fuck I want.
Yeah, and you can say it like that. You can say fuck. Who's going to get mad at the dead person?
Right.
Well, you know, that brings up another question, because I was asked by somebody, since you don't believe in God, you don't go to church and everything like that, how would you do your funeral if you had one? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, you have somebody, I mean, how would you do it? Would you have a traditional burial or what? I'm like, well, knowing me, I don't give a shit, man. You put me in a cardboard box for all I care. I don't know. But, you know, so then I began to relate to them, you know, F match with clowns and wrestling and strawberry jelly, and they stopped, you know, paying attention. You know, I guess I can understand that. But at the same time, I don't think I'm going to have a funeral. I'd either cremation or donation science. Everything like that, you know, maybe get the use out of that. I was reading up on cryogenics, and I remember seeing a documentary about people, you know, who have, let's say, like, they have a broken body, you know, they're paralyzed, something like that. They have their head cryogenically frozen, just in case science comes a way to do a head transplant or something like that. Don't quote me on that, because I lose a lot of written. Probably a lot of read. You know, I don't even know how long you keep that. You know, I don't even know how long you keep a man's head on ice or what have you, because, you know, the freezing process destroys tissue. But same, I mean, I just found that completely really, really interesting. But, you know, I mean, because if that actually worked, it would be some form of, I guess, artificial immortality, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, that's one of those things. It's like they've actually done this, like they've frozen heads, but have they thought out any? Like have they ever completed this experiment? Because it's still an experiment. If they just froze it,
it's cryogenic.
Wait,
cryogenic. That's what that is.
Uh-huh. Yep. It was a long time ago I saw that documentary. But it was quite interesting, man. I really found him like, damn, is he gonna die first or what? You know what I'm saying? I mean, do they, you know, because, you know, I'm thinking once you're dead, you're dead. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. So I don't know what the plan was, you know. I want to say it was on Discovery or the Learning Channel, but I thought it was pretty funny, you know. I don't know if they actually meant to do it or not, you know what I'm saying? So, it was just crazy. No, I don't think I'd ever want to go through that, because Lord forbid, I would have, let's say, like, they had cryogenics in 1990, and I woke up in 2000, and every time I saw on the radio, I have to hear Lil Wayne's voice every song on the radio, in a heavy rotation, you know what I'm saying? I'd be really pissed off at all the money I spent on Crosby and Stacey. Really.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, all I would say to people is, you know, live your life the way you see fit, the best, you know, that you can, and enjoy it. Enjoy it. That's the whole thing. Why not? Live your life, enjoy it, have a good time, and enjoy the people around you, encourage them to enjoy you, encourage themselves, so that you can feel as though you've lived the best life that you could possibly live. And, you know, to me, I feel that that would, you know, assuage a lot of the guilt that people feel when a person passes away. Enjoy them now.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah. Or like what I heard before, like, I listened to several atheist shows, and I listened to one where, you know, people were saying, like, why wait until you're dead to have the party? Like, if you know you're going to die soon, have the big funeral party with all your friends and family while you're still alive, and then, you know, maybe go live in your, you know, like if you're a grandparent, go live in your kid's house and die, but you already had the big funeral party, and then they could just have a small family get rid of your thing, which I wouldn't say burial, because I think we gotta stop doing that and taking up land. Set them on fire, whatever you gotta do. Like me, myself, I would say just bury my naked body in the ground and let the earth feed off of me. You know, that's where I evolved from anyway. Even though I don't know much about evolution, but I figure enough smart people have figured it out that I can trust them. They actually studied it and looked it up and tested each other's work, not like religion. So, you know, they say evolution's on, so just put me back in the planet where I came from.
Yeah, let you fertilize a tree, right?
Yeah, like, why? And I don't need some fancy box. Like, I'm all right. Like, no nothing. Just the flesh. Just as it was. Like, the earth does not need me to have a shirt on and some fancy undershorts. Just throw me in there.
There you go. And, you know, it's interesting. But, yeah, no, you have to tell them, you know, what you go. Don't spend a lot of money. And that's another thing. You know, people spend exorbitant amounts of money on the funeral. And, you know, if that was allocated, then that's fine. That's one thing. That's that person's wishes, and they got exactly what they wished for. But, again, goes back to what I was saying earlier with, in some cases, some of these funeral directors, they play on the vulnerability and the emotions of the grieving parties and talk them into getting all of this unnecessary stuff and spending exorbitant amounts of money. So, you know, to me, that's not necessarily the wisest thing, because I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen in my own family, spending crazy amounts of money on a funeral. But when this person came to you in real life and needed help, you didn't have the money to help them. You didn't have any money. You didn't want to assist them. But now that they've, you know, passed on, now you want to spend all this money on a funeral. Why didn't you just appreciate that person when they were alive?
Right.
Yeah, spending money on death. That's like that's so much focus to that love. They love to hate death, which seems to be very religious influenced, you know. You go and you give 10% because that's part of what you got to do to know Jesus and get to heaven after you die. So you're spending money on your death. Like, you're paying life insurance in religion before you even go and pay real life insurance when you have a family. You're spending, and then you have a funeral, you're spending more money on just death. It's like you're pumping money into something that doesn't really need any more money anymore. Let's spend some money on somebody that needs a sandwich.
Right.
Yeah, feed a living person. You know, like, don't buy a fancy box for a dead person. But I'm not telling whoever's listening how to live your life. I'm just telling you the things that I think are goofy. And I'm not going to sit there and not talk to adults like they're adults and tell you that your ideas are pretty darn silly.
Exactly. You know, you could you know, take that money and use it to do something great in that person's honor. You know, I know a friend of mine, you know, had a parent that passed away, and what I did was donated a tree, you know, in their honor. And, you know, you can do something like that, or you can actually go out and maybe use some of that money and help a domestic violence shelter, you know, if that's, you know, the cause of that person's death, whatever, you know, help some type of shelter that can help some people, you know, so that maybe they can avoid, you know, an unnecessary death. You know, just there are a number of things that you can do.
And that tree, that's a biological addition to like make up for a biological subtraction. Like as a member of this species, as an earthling, that's something that's like something smart and logical to do. Like, okay, something that came from the planet died, so I'm gonna donate something for the planet that creates photosynthesis. You know, it creates oxygen, it creates shade. You know, it's something useful from the earth. I know I sound like one of those Greenpeace hippies right now, but yeah, that's a good idea right there. Donate a tree.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah, and I posted an article from Wrath, from James Wrath White, Words of Wrath. That's his blog spot, and he had an article, Coping with Death as an Atheist. And so I put that on Facebook. I tweeted it out, and I also put it in the room, but he's a non-believer, and he's dealt with that particular issue as well. And it's actually a really good article, so I would just encourage you guys to read it.
Cool. Hey, check it out. We got a call. Oh, caller, area code 310.
Linda, call me.
Oh. Hello?
Hey.
Oh,
how you doing there?
Hi, am I on?
What's up? You call
Hi,
me the homie.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we got
you. I'm sorry, I've had the phone on mute. Couldn't hear you guys. Or you guys couldn't hear me. Hi,
well,
everybody.
Hey, Comey, you ready to talk about death?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was hearing some other voice in the background kind of threw me off. Sorry about that. I didn't catch all of the conversation, but I've been listening in to you guys for the last, I'd say about 10, 15 minutes maybe. And I just find it interesting on how much, you know, money is spent on death and the financial hardship and burdens that's left on people that are without the proper finances to bury loved ones and stuff like that. Me and my friends used to joke about, you know, how much it costs to die more than actually living growing up. And it just, you know, it gets pretty expensive. I mean, especially when, you know, you have caskets starting, you know, at the minimum at, you know, a couple thousands. And, you know, if you're not working with a large policy to even take care of the burial, it can be really, really hard on, you know, those that are left behind. Because especially, you know, coming from where I come from, you know, nobody's going to see their loved ones without being taken care of, if they can help it, you know, no matter if we got to sell dinner plates or, you know, do a little fundraiser, little donations and stuff. And to me, you know, being an atheist now, I just look at it as a waste. I mean, I kind of had that idea beforehand anyway, just because of the burdens that was left on me after my mom's death. But now it's just kind of like, I mean, none of that stuff really matters. All the flowers are going to die, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The plaque itself can be really expensive. Just to, you know, have your name on a tombstone is like,
right,
at the minimum $500. And it's like, really? You know?
Yep.
And then you think about the time. I mean, I'm personally one of those people that go to the cemetery to visit loved ones and stuff, but a lot of those people don't even go back to even revisit some of these, you know, loved ones. And the reasons could vary from person to person, but I mean, for myself, I always figured that it was a waste and that the money could be utilized to something more beneficial, like somebody's education left behind, as opposed to, you know, me going out in a style just because, you know, that's what we're used to. It's pretty traditional depending on the family that you come from.
Why do you need a coffin cremated?
Say it again.
Why do you need a coffin
cremation? Why do you need a coffin?
For cremation.
You know what? I wondered that too. And they're just as expensive as some of the regular coffin. I mean, one of my, first time I heard of that was a good friend of mine that was murdered a few years back. And I'm like, I thought they just, you know, tossed the bodies together and burned them up or something. But no, they actually, I think the law mandated that they had to have a casket. I don't know the reason why, though.
Probably just to force you to buy something. Just to, like, I bet somebody involved with making that law sells caskets. That's it just seems like a greed thing. Follow the money.
Well, like someone said in the chat room, it is a for-profit business, and they have special coffins specifically for cremation. So,
right, and what's so special about setting something on fire? I mean, I'm just flesh. I'm just flesh from this planet, just like a piece of steak that I throw in my oven or throw on the grill and set that on fire and put it in my face. Like, you said they are playing off of people's feelings, because I can see how other people who don't think like me, they don't want to just see grandma thrown on a bonfire somewhere out in the woods. So they're playing on your feelings to make money. While me, I could totally see that. Like, that's the logical choice. Go toss them out in the woods, and then let's go get back to work and have some sandwiches, because they died, and that's what's going to happen. We know that.
Oh, yeah, but don't let them fool you, because you can also get a cardboard box. You don't have to put them in a coffin. You could also have that person cremated in a cardboard box, you know, that kind of fits inside of a little wood shell. And it looks like a regular casket, but it's not. It's really a cardboard box.
Right, and that's when they cremate them to make the ashes there, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm right. Old school. Can I just put it in a Crown Royal bag with the dominoes? Like,
right. I happen to be checking this out, and I was kind of, maybe I was wrong on the cost of the casket for my friend's, my co-worker's funeral. What, my wife? But, you know, you can get these in 20 or 18-gauge steel. This one is brushed with natural ebony finish, white velvet interior, eternal rest adjustable bed, matching pillow, memory and record tube, half couch, rubber gasket seal, a locking mechanism. Oh, I don't understand the locking mechanism. I hope it locks from the outside and not the inside. But anyway. Swing bar.
You sold me on the adjustable.
Yeah.
An adjustable resting bed, like for a dead person, an adjustable bed?
Yeah.
That's what Mitt Romney's going to get. I know he already pre-ordered his adjustable bed.
Oh, hilarious. But, I mean, people do some interesting things, you know, at these funerals. I mean, we've seen people buried in cars. We've seen people buried with all of their jewelry. You know, on Modern Family, they had the clown, you know, funeral. It's just interesting. People buried on motorcycles. I'm going to post the link now. But, yeah, you know, but, you know, if that's how they want it to go, that's how they want it to go. So,
right. You know what? I thought it was really weird when I seen that, Kim. I think it's becoming, I don't know what state that was in. One person was standing up at the funeral or at the wake, and it, you know, I'm not really bothered by death like that, but I know there are some people that are kind of freaked out. I mean, just the idea of visualizing a dead body is uncomfortable for some people, you know? which is one of the reasons why I've made the arrangements to have, you know, my cremation done. I don't want to remember it with nobody hovering over my dead body. Most of the time, you don't even look the same, depending on, you know, how you pass and stuff. But that's I think, I mean, yes, it's their wishes and all, but, like, what about the people that may be uncomfortable by that stuff, you know?
And we have a line, as a matter of fact, you know. And let's see what they got to say on the situation.
What'd you say?
Shepard is on the line, man.
Hey, this is Greg calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey.
Hey, Greg.
Fascinating topic. I love bumping into this subject. Not too many people talk about this stuff. The best book I ever read about this has been around for a long time. You guys have all probably read it. The American Way of Death by Jessica Mitford. And she also wrote one called The American Way of Birth that covers the all the financial, you know, shenanigans that go around being born and dying here in America. And I always recommend that book anytime anybody's talking about funerals, because what it did was it opened my eyes, and I started reading. You just go to your state's website, and you can read all of the code that your state will tell you exactly how everything works, you know, licensing for people who operate crematoriums and funeral homes and all that, and you can dig down in and find out exactly what happens when someone dies at a hospital. You can actually sign for the body if you make arrangements with the attending physician. You can transport it to a crematorium directly in your own vehicle. You simply have to sign, of course, chain of custody. And in my state, in Tennessee, you can cremate somebody for less than $1,000 and be totally done with it. You know, no coffin, no nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really, and here's another, a little bit of humor here. You can actually buy headstones wholesale, by the way, on the internet. I think you can actually buy caskets through Walmart, and I'm not saying that to be funny. That's actually true. You can go to Walmart's website and just type in caskets, and they sell them wholesale.
Okay. That's awesome.
Wow.
I think they sell them at Costco, too.
What's that?
Yeah.
I think they sell them at Costco, too.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about this topic is, I always kind of go into the psychology of it, is the way we act at funerals is a really big window to our psychology in America and our obsession with form, our obsession with the human body. And I think of what it used to be like. Of course, I don't know because I'm only 43, but I think of what it used to be like when death was actually a rite of passage for a family. And they stayed with the body for 2 or 3 days, and all of the family came in, and it was a process that everyone went through, and they all actually, you know, dug the hole that the casket or the body went into, and it was a rite of passage. And what we've done is we've outsourced it to a corporation, and we've let other people handle that because we don't want to process that anymore. We don't understand how to go through that type of grief, that really direct and real witnessing of a human body. I mean, it touches us so deeply on an emotional and a spiritual level. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, because you're right. There used to be a point in time when people would actually, you know, take time out to grieve. You know, in other countries, you know, they actually grieve openly. They grieve in public, and in some countries, you know, whoever has the loudest criers or, you know,
yeah,
the most convincing, you know, criers, you know, that, you know, determines if it was a good funeral. People would actually pay folks to cry at their funeral. And, you know, yeah, and I mean, I understand what you mean when you say it's a rite of process, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, we can't bring the people back. People need to learn better coping mechanisms, you know, and I think that kind of ties into, you know, the rite of, you know, process, as
yeah,
you were speaking of earlier, and
yeah,
you know, give yourself some time. Give yourself some time to grieve. You know, and you know, I've spoken before about how, you know, how we have family reunions, especially the fights at the family reunions. But why can't we have a healing? So, you know, at the family reunion, take some time out to remember those that you've lost. Maybe, you know, get up there and say a few words or whatever, and then you all can, like, you know, kind of grieve a little bit collectively. And I just think that would be therapeutic and cathartic.
There's a you guys are probably familiar with the National Home Funeral Alliance. There's a small movement in America of people that choose ahead of time to have the funeral at their home, and like you said, do the cardboard box, and people draw on it, and they write their well wishes on there, and they put flowers on it, and they go through that whole process. It's really neat.
Yeah. You know, that's the way to go.
You know, I watch a lot of things that relate that deal with ancient societies and stuff like that. And one of the things that I found fascinating was the like in the Roman households, you know, one of the ways to drive ambition was to have the bust or the death mask of the of your ancestors in a room. You know what I'm saying? It's folded, not only to show reverence to your ancestors, but to drive you. This is where you came from.
Yeah.
These are the great men that preceded you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was a way of driving your ambition and making sure you lived up to your bloodline, or to your ancestors' bloodline.
I was recently watching an amazing video from a gentleman who's been a researcher since he was probably 15, and he was briefly talking about the Egyptian and of course they're well known for their all the things that they did with their bodies and what they did to preserve them and put them in tombs. Their royalty. There was a 15-step process for mummification, and it was extremely sacred. It had to be done very, very precisely. No steps could be. Overlooked, it had to be done by rote, and they were very serious about it. And of course, you know, they believed that, you know, once that person went into the afterlife, they took all that cool stuff with them, you know, that was in the tomb with them. But I think this is one of the most fascinating subjects that anybody can talk about on radio, because it really taps into something about us that most of us have just let go to sleep, and we're so busy with the crazy world and Facebook and debt and all these other things, we just don't talk about this stuff anymore.
That's true. We don't talk about it, or if we do talk about it, it's real hush-hush, or they try to rush you through it because they don't want to talk about it, you know, and they don't want to deal with the situation. And that's the reason why I said earlier, don't forget the babies, don't forget the children, because they grieve. Their grief is very, very real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easier to deal with that grief, you know, especially when they're a child, than to deal with, you know, an adult that's emotionally stunted because of decisions that adults made when they were younger. And then, you know, but the adults dealt with their grief and their sadness.
Yeah.
But they didn't take time out to help the children, help the kids. It's important. Don't forget them.
Yeah. And, you know, and with the children, focus on not just because they might be grieving, they might not understand. They might, because, you know, it could be like a year or so that a kid keeps waking up every few months. Like, all right, so is it back to normal now? Is Uncle Tim there? What's going on? Like, what, is he still gone to wherever he went? Is he going to pull up in the old van and we're going to go off to the Mariners game? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
They might not actually even know.
It's right. one of the things that amazes me about us as human beings is, and this is just my personal belief, is I think we spend a high 90% of our waking hours in this lifetime actually afraid of death, whether it's conscious or subconscious.
Right.
I really do. And I just don't, I think that part of us is just so asleep that we're not even aware of it. We've forgotten that we've forgotten, really.
Right. Right. And I'll be the first one to admit, you know, it's not so much the death that I'm afraid of, it's how I die.
Oh,
that
yeah,
I'm afraid
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know,
that's interesting.
You know, I don't want my head to be decapitated. I'd rather just die in my sleep.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
think that's everybody, a lot of people's wishes when it comes to death. It's just easier for it to be as painless as possible. But the reality is that a lot of us is not going to go that route. You know what I mean? I think that's the scary part about, you know, certain things. Like, there's even some people that I know that hold themselves back from certain life experiences just because they're afraid that they may be on that airplane that may crash. or that boat that may not make it on the other side of, you know, the world. And it just, it gets really interesting when you think about it. I think that's a lot of people's worry when it comes to that, Kim, is how you're going to go and not knowing, and knowing that you don't always have the control over, you know, well, really, ain't even always, you don't.
Right,
I am. I'm one of them with the airplane. I'm one of those guys. I feel like the airplane. We're waving a middle finger at gravity. Why are we all the way up there in the sky? That is silly. We are not supposed to be up there. We're just being goofy at that point. We're being so arrogant every time we load up an airplane. My goodness, like, I don't know how I'm going to get back to Washington State. I might take a train. Like, I'll take an airplane if they'll serve me an adult beverage. Last time I rode a plane, I wasn't 21 yet. I could probably handle it now if I just fall asleep real early in the flight. But, my goodness, we're not supposed to be up there. That's goofy.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of cracked up when a friend of mine was talking about she's getting on the plane to go to Vegas and asking people to pray for her. I'm like, you probably should pray for the pilot. That's probably the one you should be paying for.
There you go.
He dies, you're all dying. But
yeah, that's crazy. I was landing one time, I want to say in San Diego, when I went to visit family, when my mom was still alive. And I've flown a million times since I was like six, so it doesn't bother me. But there was this young couple sitting next to me. I mean, they couldn't have been maybe early 20s. And they were Catholic, you know, they had the rosaries in their hand and they were doing the cross sign. I mean, they were really nervous. And, you know, of course, I respected that. I didn't try to crack any jokes or anything, but I just thought it was interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. You make a lot of friends on airplane. I remember one time I was flying somewhere and I was sitting next to this couple. It was a young couple. And the young man was sitting between me and his girlfriend or his wife, and he was afraid, and, you know, she started talking to me. She said, he's afraid, and she was like, will you hold his hand? So she had one hand, I had the other hand. So, you know, we talked the whole time there, and at the end of the flight when we were, you know, descending, you know, he got sick. And I was like, oh, poor baby. So I gave him some gum. I always have gum on me. And, you know, at the end, I gave them both a hug. And so, you know, I was happy to do something nice for someone. So it's interesting.
You know, my dad one time said, and I know he didn't make this up. He heard it somewhere, talking about the ways that we can die. He said, well, if you jumped off of a 20-story building, he said, it's not the fall that kills you. It's the sudden stop. I thought that was kind of funny.
I think the messed up part about death is if you know that you're going to die. You know, the moment you, like, let's say, like, I don't know, you're in a, you lock yourself in a bank vault, and you just know that there's no way you get out of here.
Yeah.
You lock yourself in a bank vault. Kind of happen that way, though. But, you know, I'm just giving an example. You know, it just, you know, I think that's probably my fear is like giving, using the plane example again, is if the engines go out, I got about 20,000-30,000 feet to accept the fact that I'm about to become a crater in the earth or something like that, you know? And I imagine that, you know, when I'm looking at the plane crash and stuff like that, like that one in Florida that went straight into the ground and everything, I'm like, God almighty, can you imagine? Because it's probably going to take you about 5-10 minutes to get there, you know? You got all that long to realize you are screwed.
Yeah. It's amazing. I think, and I don't know this for a fact because, I mean, I only have one perspective, and that's of a human being, but it's been said that we're the only creatures on the planet that are consciously aware of our own death. I wonder if animals have the ability to think about it, or, you know, some say, you know, certain animals have a certain instinct or whatever. But I think the, you know, I'm not saying I'm looking forward to it because it could come in any shape or form. Like the lady said earlier, you know, it's the how am I going to die that bugs me. I'm okay with not being here anymore, but I don't want it to be something, you know, painful and drawn out and all that other kind of stuff. But it's the thinking about it part, I think, that gets us. You know, the whole anticipation, and I always think about it, you know, Just think about it. You spend your whole life, you know, anticipating, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. And then maybe that moment comes and you're like, God, that wasn't that big of a deal. Jeez, I can't believe I got so worked up over it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just like
right.
any other moment in time, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's like the first time I drove a car in the city. I'd driven a car in the town. That was fine. Driving a car in the city around these wacky people in the
yeah.
rain. Yeah, I thought that was it. I was like, this is the last 5 miles I'm ever going to do. Make the turn of the radio. Let's enjoy this.
Yep.
Yeah, then when it's done, it's like, ah, you know what? That was kind of awesome. But that,
yeah.
it was freaky, though. But I'm never going to bungee jump, though. Can't forget that.
Yeah, that's not on my list. And skydiving's not on my list either.
Yeah, no, that's just all that stuff where we just stop waving our middle fingers at gravity. No, it's just stop it. That's a strong force. Let's respect it.
Yeah.
But
let me
dig into something here I found funny on one of these little websites I was looking up. Hinduism, belief about death. The Hindus believe death is a part of the continuing cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth. The soul of the dead transfers to another body after death. Funeral practices. Hindus generally cremate their dead. In preparation for cremation, the body is bathed, laid in a coffin, adorned with sandalwood, paste in garlands, and wrapped in white cloth. In the cremation ceremony, the body is carried three times, counterclockwise, around a pyre, and then placed upon it. The chief mourner hits the cremation switch. Now, that one, that made me laugh, because they do all those steps, the counterclockwise, they do all the wrapping up, and then the mourner just hits a switch. Now, like, they still went with nearly modern technology. Like, next they're going to say he just turned on the Crematum app. And signed up. Like, you know, let go of the rest of the goofy stuff. Like, you're modern, you know better.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Get all worked up for 20 minutes and then go hit it.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, do something dramatic, man. Fire up the propane grill, you know. Let's Hank Hill it, man.
Oh, there you go. They stand around in the alley. Yep. Yep.
I'll tell you what.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons why I found the movie Final Destination to be so odd, because it's like death has this entire elaborate Acme Looney Tunes type plan in works to get back at people who escaped some type of divine plan he already had. Well, I can't say he, because it's supposed to be a presence, more or less.
Yeah.
And so, knowing that you're going to die anyway, it constructs these elaborate traps to get you, you know, like the bucket has to fall against the mop, which falls against the door, which closes the door, which hits a gas line, which causes an explosion, which pushes the car down the hill into the lake, which the lake is frozen, so the car drives over the lake, hits another propane tank, which blows up at the guy's house next door to you. Your house catches on fire, and for some reason, a screwdriver lands in your forehead. And, you know,
yeah. Dramatic, freaky accidents will happen, but it's not because of all that stuff. Like, I don't know if anybody's a hip-hop nerd like me that, like, I've seen this backstage DVD of a DMX and Jay-Z tour, and somebody just forgot to hit the emergency brake on the tour bus, and it rolled down a hill. And if somebody was sitting on a bench not facing the bus, they would have got rolled over, and that's how it would have happened. Not
yeah.
because of some... I feel like Final Destination was another form of our silly little species creating a deity, something
yeah.
that has control over your life and death with those movies, because we're, you know, as I said before, we're so smart, we're dumb. We can make a movie, so let's make a movie about a brand new type of god-devil sort of character,
yep.
because we're geniuses.
It sells. It sells. I thought about this. I don't know if it would be an analogy or a comparison, and it seems kind of far-fetched, but I think it's pretty similar. Think back to the first time, you know, you ever had sex with somebody. And let's just assume that it was a decent experience. And maybe afterwards you're like, and I'm not saying it wasn't really cool, but afterwards you're like, damn, you know, I worried about that for 5 years or whatever, and all my friends talked about it all the time. It wasn't really that big of a deal. I think that could be kind of a similar experience in some people's lives.
Yeah, where you once again, you survived something. Or just even leading up, because you know that first sexual experience, that's a part of that whole growing up there. Just the first time you say, hey, can I get your telephone number, and you get it, and you're like, hey, I'm a grown-ass man. Now I need to go get me some penny loafers. I'm a grown man now. I know what I'm doing.
Crazy. Yeah, you know, I like what you said about the theater of the whole thing, and I saw, I think, the first Final Destination, and it was pretty ridiculous. But, yeah, and this is another thing that most people don't understand or really care to read about. You know, in Hollywood, of course, getting shot is very dramatic. Someone shoots you, you go through two windows, through two rows of sheetrock, and, you know, out a 10-story window. It doesn't happen that way. And the guy that shoots you, he goes back about 10 feet. It doesn't work that way. Most gunfights are over with in about 2 seconds or less, two shots or less. That's how most gunfights occur. But, of course, Hollywood takes it and turns it into this big, dramatic, long, drawn-out process. And I think it distorts people's, of course, their sense of reality.
Yeah. I really did think that people actually, you know, and like if you're rolling with your best friend and you get shot, that you still have enough time and breath, no matter how many times you were shot. I mean, if you were completely raked by an Uzi, you still have enough time to say, go on without me. You know, or give a speech, man. I mean, I've seen movies with death scenes that take 5 minutes. I'm like, is this dude going to die or what? I mean,
don't die until the speech is over. Like, how did it just happen to be that perfect? You got the right words out at the right tone. Or even if you're not getting shot, if you're just dying in general, like in one of Adam Sandler's great ones, Click, where he's just laying there talking, dying. It's like, yo, hurry up and die already. Yeah. Like, by the time I finish this last bite of pizza, you better be dead, Chief, because I'm ready to play some video games. Like, let's die now.
I remember Rob the Nerd just said, remember Queen Latifah's death scene and Set It Off? I remember that death scene.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she went out like a champ.
Oh,
she
hell
went
yeah.
out like a champ. That's how you go out. You know, she had her little teary moment, and she got out. She was like, oh, fuck that. And just had her moment. That was a champ.
Swiss cheese her ass, man. Damn. Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Figure, you know, if I'm going, they're going to read about me in the paper at least one day.
Yeah, and she did. Yeah, and like you said, she had that teary moment. So she thought about it. She was like, that's it. You know, like all my friends are dead, which is the name of an album for some reason. And all my friends are dead, and not going to get to keep this money. And then also, who knows what else, because, you know, you can think a lot of thoughts in just a few seconds. You know, she probably thought, my life probably sucked. I probably, dropped out of high school, never really established a good career, and this is how it's fucking ending. You know, I mean, at least I got this funky car, because I remember, I'm a 90s geek. I remember specifically, she hit the switch on that car and bounced it up like a Snoop Dogg music video and rode through there and jumped out. She was like, I'm going to be as cool as I possibly can for this last second, because this is pretty much all I've amounted to. So all those thoughts probably could have ran through that character's head. I think she portrayed that well in that little shot right there.
Yeah,
you know, that's my 90s nerdiness.
I was earlier today, the movie crossed my mind. I've only seen it once, The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, and I'm not a big Cruise fan, but I do remember the scene where he was literally fixing to die, and the enemy was standing over him, and all he had to do was just stab him, and I guess the bad guy paused for a second, and Cruise took that one last breath and skewered him, and then the boss of the enemy said, you know, don't kill this man. He's a warrior, you know. He was on his last dying breath, and he used that moment to kill his enemy. I respect him. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. And that's that movie where Tom Cruise learned to be an equal swordsman with guys with swords.
Yeah.
The whole line, he did in like, 4 months?
Yeah.
You know,
ridiculous. Totally ridiculous.
And then he was the only one who survived. I wonder why that is. But, you know, I want to ask a question then. Do any of you think that we kind of trivialize death? Like, we watch horror movies. You don't watch a Jason or a Freddy movie for the plot line, okay? You watch those movies and see how these teenagers, well, these 30-year-olds playing teenagers are going to die, right? And then we have the video games. You know, I was a big Mortal Kombat fan. And the fact that you could snatch a dude's head off with his spine hanging was the coolest thing ever when I was in my teens. So do you think that we've kind of become desensitized, maybe we sensationalize that?
Yes. I believe we've become desensitized to, you know, quite a few things. And there are some things that, you know, we have trivialized. But in some cases, you know, again, going back to something that I said earlier, people don't know how to identify their emotions, or they suppress their emotions. I mean, there, you know, are a variety of different reasons, and, you know, learning how to recognize what those reasons are. But with some people, yeah, definitely, they've become extremely desensitized. And, you know, they trivialize everything. You know, it's just interesting.
The
a soldier out there in war, you know, like, we just send them out there. Like, we're just, like, we're sitting on the phone chilling. You know, I got a Dasani bottle of water. I'm cooling out in Wi-Fi while some other dude is, what, stepping on a landmine or running from a grenade or something right now, trying not to die. And I just, you know, I got one of these thick naked juices just chilling out with crushed ice. You know, like, or like the whole Casey Anthony thing. Like, everybody's so concerned with trying to, you know, let's get her in prison, she needs to get what she deserves. Nobody's mourning the kid, you know, somebody sold some teddy bears and pocketed all the money. Like, we don't care. We don't care, and I think we haven't cared for a long time.
Yeah. It's interesting, the Friday the 13th phenomenon that hit, I remember watching the very first one, and you know, of course, we look back now and we think, my God, this was tame by today's standards. But think about it. They took death, this fascination that we have with death, and they mixed it with the thrill of sex. So they took both of the opposing dichotomies, death and life, and they mixed them together. So as a teenager, you could sit in the theater and be scared to crap about watching people die, but at the same time, you got the thrill of sex mixed in there. At the same time, I mean, what a cocktail that was!
Man, you're probably
right,
on a date, so you're gonna go have sex right after you do that.
Exactly,
yeah, and then probably get into a fight with her ex-boyfriend.
Exactly,
and try not to die in that fight.
Exactly, but I mean, going back to, you know, their cognitive dissonance there. You know, what I find interesting is, you know, they have people to a certain degree afraid of death. Oh, you're gonna go to hell. You're going to be gnashing of the teeth and all of that. Or you're going to go to heaven and streets are paved with gold and all of that. You're going to get a chance to be with, you know, past relatives, the angels, all of that. But then, you know, if that's the case, if it's so great, then why aren't they killing themselves?
Yeah, you know, and speaking of cognitive dissonance, like, we are a species ready to kill. But a lot of us, we like to, like, retarded sentence there. We like to kill from a distance because, you know, there are some ones out there that'll like to get up close with a knife and really get that, really feel the heat from your body and smell your blood coming out and get that kill. But we like to kill with those drone strikes or with a gun from a distance or with a landmine while you're off away in a bunker somewhere. Or
yeah.
Less than 20 years after our species so smart, invented the airplane, and so dumb, less than 20 years later, dropped an atomic bomb on another group of people. Like, as soon as we got the airplane, we said, man, we got to blow some shit up now.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, you read about carpet bombing and stuff like that, and, you know, when you're sitting in a completely different country away from that area, or you're in the plane, you don't see what's happening. you don't see these people actually burning to the asphalt, or they're being pretty much vaporized. And the people who are not dead instantly have to burn alive, and some people have to endure because they become adhered to the ground.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading about, saying the carpet bombers in Leningrad and other cities in World War II and everything like that, and it's horrific. You know, you read about the napalm runs in Vietnam, and it's a horrific thing. But then when you're not in the area and you don't have to deal with it, it doesn't bother you as much. You know, if you're sitting in a little room with a joystick and you're flying a little plane that can do your killing for you, it takes your empathy out of the whole thing. You know, maybe just me, But then again, I'm also reading about Genghis Khan, and when you can go and wipe out nearly several million people when you don't have bombs, you have to individually kill several million people. Now, I don't know how long it takes for you to get like that, but it's an incredible thing where humans did their killing by hand and in person. Unless you were the king, you didn't have to do that. And now we do our killing. Well, the more advanced states like United States, we don't have to be there to kill someone. Whereas, you still have, less developed countries, like you still have to be in the vicinity, but you don't have to be real close to them. You have guns, you have missiles, stuff like that. And we're still I'm still trying to figure out, if we have so much religion on this planet, and so much religion states how important life is, especially to the God that created us, yet we spend so much time developing ways to kill each other and then not really giving a shit that we did.
Yeah, it's amazing that you put those words that way, because it's true. I feel that it's quite obvious as a people worldwide, we are in deep denial. But I can only speak for the United States. That's the culture that I grew up in. I'm from the U.S., born and bred here. And we're in deep denial about how we kill. And like a gentleman said earlier, we outsource it. We 1099 it. We sanitize it. They take words like, they collateral damage. They don't even use those words anymore. And they keep reinventing these words and redefining what it means to kill other human beings. And eventually, in 25 or 50 years, if we live that long, the word that the government feeds us for killing another human being will be so benign, we won't even recognize it anymore.
Exactly. And I'm not saying I'm a person that likes dogs or anything, but we're going to put them to sleep. Yeah, we'll probably be saying that about people. We neutralized that unit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's taken care of.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's one reason why, you look at movies, you look at sci-fi movies and stuff like that, and you look at something like The Terminator and Skynet, and you think, this is just fiction, it can never happen. I look at that and I said, there's somebody thinking about how this could happen, how they could make this a reality where warfare is fought by machines, and you don't even have to give a shit. There's no emotional investment in your soldiers. They can do whatever they want, and you can have them do whatever they want. Somebody's thinking about that. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm pretty sure there's somebody trying to. We already have drones now. They are flown by humans. How long do you think it'll be before they're unmanned at all? You give them. I'm saying they have their target, they have their mission, and they're supposed to carry it out automatically.
And we do. We live in that future. I mean, sure, it's not Skynet or basically it's none of the Arnold movies. How about that? It's not Total Recall or any of those. But at the same time, I can sit here and video call you from an iPod Touch over a Wi-Fi signal. They got those drones there. New York is underwater. They're fracking and causing earthquakes. And there's a black guy overseeing the whole thing with a funny name. I mean, we are very close. It does look like those movies that I watched growing up. But at the same time, we're just killing each other, but not with bayonets, but with hellfire missiles.
Yeah. It's interesting. The people like us on the call could look at it and say, you know, it's a way to be emotionally detached from the actual act of killing another human being. But the people that are actually in control, and they're not in power, they just think they are, they're in control, they look at it as a way of being more efficient because right. They don't value human life. And I think eventually, if we continue to let them do what it is that they do to us in this world, and we're victims and we also participate knowingly and unknowingly, they will eventually get us to the point where we don't feel anything anymore, and they'll either use the flesh and blood body to do the killing, or they'll just use a machine.
Right.
So they basically, they're covering both sides of the equation. Whether they have willing participants to do the human killing or not, they'll just replace us with... Because people say, well, Greg, what would happen if all of the soldiers in the United States military said, we're no longer going along with this conquest and imperialism, we quit? They'd outsource it. They'd 1099 it to foreign contractors. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, Blackwater. Blackwater all day long. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is, you know, there are a lot of similarities between the military and religion. Because in both, you're taught to turn your brain off and to follow orders and
good
to
point.
Submit to authority.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities there.
Good point. Yeah,
right.
I served in the Navy, and you know, we talk about how inefficient the government is when it wants to be. I lived on an aircraft carrier for 5 years, and there's a lot I know now that I didn't know when I served. The military can be extremely efficient when it wants to be.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
Yep.
And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, it's even more than, you know, just a few points that we've thrown out, especially those of us that have been in the military, with some of the things that, you know, they teach us. And, you know, what I find interesting is you have all of these people, you know, talking about the different things happening with the oil embargoes and things of that nature. You can, one of the first things they teach you in the military is you can control a nation by controlling their oil and their water. You can control people by controlling their food.
Yep.
Those are basic tenets of the military.
Yep. Yeah, we hear a lot of talk about a cashless society. That's the primary way to control people's food and water.
Exactly.
Right.
Primary.
Well,
go ahead.
I was about to change gears. You go ahead and finish your thoughts.
No. I was just kind of expounding on what we talked about. Go ahead. Throw another crumb on the table. We'll talk about it.
Okay. The thing I was going to bring up, you know, is that is. You see all these, like, I just saw an article for the you know, after all these times in which somebody predicted the end of the world and that person was wrong, there's still a potential this next dude might be right or whoever. So we're talking about, you know, we're talking about the end of the world, December 21st, because the Mayans said so. And, you know, you see a lot of, every time we get to these end of the world type scenarios, especially like the last guy with Harold Crampling or whatever, and people are gleeful, some people are gleeful, and some people, like one guy, some guys quit their jobs and ran around trumpeting, you know, saying it's going to be the end of the world, get right, stuff like that. You know, it really amazes me at the level of disconnect that you have, and what you said, you're saying that because I believe in this deity, let's ignore the rest of them, I'm going to be saved, millions of you will not be. And so to me, that's also a disconnect when it comes to death, is that you realize the being that you love is going to allow or kill millions of other people, but not you. So as long as you're saved, does it matter? Did you even think about all the people who have suffered? Stuff like that. What if the person you know is a devout Christian to the core, but their husband isn't, they love this person 20, 30 years. That person just evaporates or dies or something like that. Well, what, where's the solace in the fact that you're now alone? Well, I guess if you have Jesus, you know,
That's a very broad subject, and the thing that popped into my spirit when you said that is the human ego is a chameleon. It'll cross dress, it'll straight dress, it'll put on a suit, it'll put on a skirt. It doesn't care. It'll hide anywhere it needs to hide in order to do what it needs to do. And somebody who's arrogant enough to think that their religion or spirituality puts them in a special category that's going to be protected from massive slaughter of people who oppress other people is either ignorant or just simply arrogant.
Yeah, or they really want that confirmation bias so bad, you know, because who knows how many actual closet atheists are kind of hanging around there. Like, because the closet exists, we never know how many closet atheists there are, but they're trying to force it like, you know, maybe this God thing is real. And then old Harold comes by and says, you know, the rapture's coming up there. I got a date. And they're like, that's it. That's that date. I'm gonna quit my job and go run with it. And it's like, chief. But yeah, confirmation bias is a tough one. I can get caught in that too myself. As soon as I'll keep reading something about a politician over and over again, and then you just give me one little piece of interview clip where he says something that has been matching my imagination for the past 8 weeks. And I'm like, I told you he is that terrible thing I thought he was.
Yeah,
he's a nightmare.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And, you know, the interesting thing about that is I had a mega church pastor admit to me that he knew that he had several atheists in his congregation. They know.
Right.
Yeah, so you'll never know the real numbers.
You know, but I believe there are quite a few more non-believers, you know, in these churches. They just don't know what to call themselves.
Right.
They might not know because they've been taught that the word atheist is bad. Like, I don't really talk about, like, over the past, like, 2 or 3 years, I just don't talk about religion to people around the city or anywhere anymore because it's the same boring conversation. I have to talk to you guys. You're the only ones that keep me going intellectually on it. Because as soon as I say the word atheist, they have at least about like 15 seconds of just brain fart. They don't even know what to do. Like, you said you're an atheist? What? Like, that's like you just said you drown puppies. Like,
yeah.
I didn't hear you say that. What?
You're an evil devil worshiper. And then Right. And, you know, what are you living for? You know, I've had them, you know. It's just, it's interesting. It's interesting how that works there. But I have a question for you, Greg. Are you a believer?
A believer in what?
Are you a theist?
Am I a what?
A theist.
Oh, am I a theist? I don't have any particular religion or faith. I believe that there's something that made all this come into being, but I think if you said, what are you really? I'm a student of truth. That's really all I care about. I keep my mind open to, you know, I could change my mind in 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. I think that's part of what evolution really is. But I don't like to box myself in any kind of a corner.
Okay, so you like fluidity. Go ahead, Mario.
Yeah. Well, I just got the 90-second chime in, so down to the wire. I guess we made another great show and another great discussion. Thanks, Greg, for calling in, man. You have some great input. Thanks to everybody in the chat rooms. You always make this a great show, and we always love doing this. I mean, I really enjoy sitting here chatting with good people like Kim. They call me Raina when she calls in, William, everybody. So this brings to close another great show. Enjoy your weekend. Kim, you want to get that donation link again?
If you want to donate to Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, you can donate to donate@blacknonbelieversofchicago.org via PayPal. And we have a chip in, blackfreethinkers.chipin.com/ Black Freethinkers Media. Sunday show, Did Jesus Really Exist? See you then, guys.
Awesome.
Have a great weekend.
Right, all right, all right. And don't forget Raina's show next Saturday, I believe. And we'll see y'all in 2 weeks from now. All right, take care. Enjoy your weekend.
All right.
Take care, everybody. Much love.
Have an adult beverage.